Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to the Hawks Talk podcast presented by your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers with Charlie Romeliotis. I am Pat Boyle from NBC Sports Chicago, back from Dallas and the NHL draft over the weekend. We'll get into the draft in just a second, Charlie. Let's start, though, with, I thought, the most interesting thing that happened moments after the draft came to an end. Stan Bowman being coy with the media when asked if the Hawks would be in on John Tavares, and that's obviously the prized free agent that is available this offseason. Here's my interaction with Bowman in Dallas as soon as the draft was over.
There are five teams that are reportedly going to meet with him. Three have been made public. There's two that we don't know about. Can you tell us if the Hawks are one of those two teams?
I wouldn't want to spoil the surprise, right? So, no, I'm not going to comment on that. But I know we're going to have a lot of discussions over the next 5 or 6 days, and we'll see where it goes.
All right, Charlie, so Stan, he was not denying nor confirming, but he, you know, he was being coy there by saying, I don't want to spoil the surprise, which is sort of uncharacteristic for Stan. You know, he's more of a, I think, more of a black and white type of general manager when it comes to things like this. But, you know, which made me think at the time, okay, they're one of the five, or they're maybe one of these two or three teams that are having phone interviews with Tavares and his, you know, CAA agency that's dealing with him. But as this kind of unfolds this week, I'm not so sure about that.
Yeah, I mean, even before your one-on-one interview, we had Stan, and you know, the question was first asked to him about Tavares, and he immediately smiled, and he said, we can't comment on that. You know, so that was the first indicator, and then you obviously interviewed him later and kind of followed up. And, you know, after what he said, he was, you know, kind of, he smiled again and said, I wouldn't be surprised, whatever. So here's my takeaway through all this, because I thought the Blackhawks would be one of five teams. And it sounds like there are five teams meeting with him in person, and then two to three others over the phone. And if those go well, it can translate into an in-person meeting. Now, you know, we know the five teams that are getting the in-person.
Yeah, let me give them Dallas, San Jose, Toronto, Boston, Tampa. Yeah. They haven't already made the pitch. Like, Toronto was first out of the gates. Tampa's already done it. They're soon to do it. And then the Islanders are also in this mix as well.
Yeah, and then so over the phone, it sounds like Nashville is a team, and then it sounds like Vegas is a team.
Yes.
There is Elliot Friedman reported the other day saying it's two of Tampa, Boston, and Chicago. So he kind of hinted that, like, Chicago might be in the mix. And then we saw, or we heard a few weeks ago that Craig Cousins of The Athletic was saying the Blackhawks are going to be big game hunters, and they might even go after John Tavares. So it's not like we're just creating something out of nothing. There is very, very clearly something there. At the very least, the Blackhawks want to get aggressive this free agency. So my biggest takeaway, whether they're in it or not, They want to go get a big game player. They have cap space to spend, and they are not going to be afraid to use it.
And they're sending the message too.
And they're sending a message
not only to Tavares, but anybody else that's on that list, and certainly the second name that we're hearing a lot of, which we'll get into a lot, is JVR, James Van Riemsdyk. But back to Tavares, you know, one thing that some of these cities/states have in common, like Vegas, like Tampa, like Nashville, is no state income tax.
Yeah.
And we've seen in years past how, like, Tampa makes its offer and says, well, look, you know, we're not going to offer you, let's say, 11 mil. We can offer you 9.5 because, you know, you're going to come out ahead of it because there's no state income tax here in Florida or in Vegas or what have you.
Right.
In Nevada.
And I remember Steven Stamkos. Yeah, he tested the market. And I remember him interviewing with Toronto. And I think Toronto was offering on like 11 or 12 million. But then he signs with Tampa for, what is it, 8 or 8.5. And,
right.
and that money is still higher than the 12 million that he would have gotten.
Exactly. So like that's something like with Illinois' situation. And look, every million counts, especially when you're the Blackhawks. Right now, the way it stands cap-wise, little over $9 million in cap space. That doesn't include the Hossa situation, which now if they trade that contract, that'll add another $5+ million to the kitty. And, you know, if they deal another significant piece, you can get that even higher. To even broach the subject of Tavares, I mean, and get accomplished what they want, which is filling out their roster and maybe giving Schmaltz an extension. To me, you know, they have to deal the Hossa contract, and they have to have a partner with whether it's Anisimov or what have you, so that they can do, you know, fix the defense as well.
Right. Yeah. And I kind of look at the Pittsburgh Penguins, and because this is the team that's comparable to the Blackhawks and having top heavy guys. So they got Sidney Crosby and Malkin and Letang
and Kessel all making
these high end. You know, they're eating a large percentage of their cap hit, but they've also won back to back Stanley Cups because they've got Crosby, Malkin, and Kessel. All three of them are playing on different lines. So if you know, hypothetically want to go that route and, you know, Jonathan Toews is your first line center or John Tavares your first line center, whatever. And then you got Patrick Kane on your second line and Tavares centering that. And then you got Schmaltz and DeBrincat still on their entry level deals. And you can still probably move Anisimov and you can still probably move like a Jan Ruda or whoever. So you would be able to make it work in the short term. Again, how would this impact past, I think Nick Schmaltz's deal is up after this year, and then DeBrincat is up after 2 years.
Correct.
An interesting thought, though, is that we haven't even mentioned, Corey Crawford's got 2 more years left on his deal.
Right.
So, like, at some point, we need to start thinking about who his replacement is going to be, and that's $6 million, I don't want to say off the books, but if they do elect to re-sign him or whatever, like, that, the goalie's not going to be making $6 million. There'll probably be a pay cut there. So, it creates another maybe couple million, but it's interesting if you toy around with the options, it's possible. It's just whether or not the Blackhawks have a larger plan in place and whether they can fit DeBrincat and Hinostroza and Schmaltz under the salary cap while doing it.
Yeah, I mean it's crazy to think. And here's the other thing that you and I were talking in Dallas when the whole Tavares, you know, first thing was pitched out there that they could even be in the running for him. He can't make more AAV-wise than Toews or Kane, right? I mean, in theory, you would think that the team would like to keep him at 10.5 or below.
Yeah.
And now, look, he's going to command 7 or 8 year deal.
Right.
It would be hard to keep him. I mean, I think you'd be getting him at somewhat of a bargain at $10 million a year, according to, you know, some of the reports we're seeing.
So this is interesting because Toronto is going in to their presentation, and I don't know if you saw this, but they're preparing to offer Tavares a 1 year max contract.
Right. So they can make it a 9 year.
$15 million.
Yeah. So and then they're going to re up them for eight and make it a 9 year deal or something.
I think they're just going to pitch like, hey, just come to us for a year. Let's go all out with Austin Matthews and Marner and William Nylander all on their entry level deals. Well, I think Nylander's an RFA, but these guys are all they're all on their entry level deals making, you know, pennies. Let's go out and try to win a cup, and then you can max out wherever next summer. So I mean, I definitely don't envision the Blackhawks going that route, but it's interesting how many different angles. And we also haven't even mentioned the fact that, you know, the salary cap is projected to go up every year, and you bring in Seattle into the mix now, and that's another source of revenue. And even when we talked about it on the previous podcast, sports gambling. How is that going to impact the salary cap? So theoretically, like they could be able to make this work if the cap continues to raise significantly.
Yeah. So and more to your point about the Maple Leafs getting creative, Elliot also reported that they kind of stole a page out of the Cubs handbook. When the Cubs courted John Lester, they made this like almost elaborate Hollywood production showing him winning the World Series at Wrigley Field in a Cubs uniform for him, you know, in the presentation. And Elliot kind of intimated that the Leafs went the extra mile as well to kind of present this, you know, all out thing like you're saying here, offering him the max deal, you know, the 1 year crazy $15 million, yeah, and then for his opportunity to, you know, make history and finally bring a cup not only to Canada but back to Toronto. So all right, at the final analysis, and we'll move on from Tavares, do you think Stan was having fun, because like that's not him, his personality by nature? Like what is your, when you look at what he said Saturday to us, and now as we sit here on Tuesday feeling like they're on the fringe at best in this conversation.
Yeah.
What was that all about on Saturday?
Yeah, my takeaway from that is they probably had a lot of internal discussion whether they want to go this route. And maybe he was just smiling. Maybe it just brought back, like, you know, oh, trust me, we've talked about it. But, you know, maybe we're going to elect. And we're all talking about this. In my opinion, I think he's going to re-sign in New York. I think he's just going to – there's no way he's
– a month ago, I would have said there's no
gone.
Shot.
Absolutely.
Lou Lamoriello has changed everything in there.
And I would be so frustrated if I was Tavares, because, like, where were all these changes when, you know – it was like Garcineau and he, they would just continue to give him a long leash, and like now the threat of him leaving. So in a way, I kind of applaud Tavares for testing the market and actually, you know, actually like testing the market and actually like making the Islanders sweat this out a bit, because they did that to him. They didn't really provide him any help. And the reason I say that too is because I guess he contacted or texted, called, whatever, the two draft picks that they signed and said, congrats, welcome to New York. So it's like, okay, well.
Welcome to New York. Just I've got a six-bedroom home that the two of you, the three draft picks could all use if you guys get called up in the next couple of years. Hey, one other thing. Hawks did not make qualifying offers to restricted free agents Anthony Duclair and Thomas Yurko. You know what? From my perspective, good. I just, they didn't do enough. Yurko certainly didn't do enough for me. Never really understood that one. Duclair was, at best, they were hoping change of scenery, whatever. Ulf Samuelson knew what he was like in New York. And to me, in a limited sample size with the Hawks, he is not something that I would give a lot of thought or money to.
Yeah, I mean, Yurko, I'm not surprised. And I don't think Yurko is necessarily beating himself up over this either, because the way they utilized him last year, I mean, he went to Rockford, and then he did really well in Rockford, and almost averaging nearly a point per game, and then he gets called up, and he's a healthy scratch for like eight games in a row.
Right.
So he's probably just ready for it. I'm intrigued to see where he goes. I think he might go overseas. But yeah, Duclair, there's probably a reason he's been on three different teams at the age of 22.
That's a great point.
You know, and the potential is certainly there. I just don't think, you know, the Blackhawks as of now have, I think they have only six roster spots left. Mm-hmm. So if you don't see a fit there, just move on. The prove it year was last year when the Blackhawks weren't performing. They were out of the playoffs and he didn't do enough. So I think it's, you know, both sides can move on there too.
All right, let's move to the mailbag. Thanks, by the way, for all your questions. A lot of you had,
we had
duplicates or similar ones, so we tried to kind of group them together. But thanks for listening to the podcast every week and for participating. Tony Gianeras asks the question, which free agents are the Blackhawks targeting? Joe chimes in, how do the Blackhawks fill the hole at the second line left wing? So we'll put those two together, and we kind of alluded to it off the top here, this podcast. I think their focus is really not John Tavares. I think it is James Van Riemsdyk. It's been a name, Charlie, that has been rumored for a couple of years. I think Stan has liked him. Obviously, his brother, Trevor, was here. And he's coming off a career year production-wise, 36 goals. He had 54 points. He's only 29 years of age. And he's due to make in that $5 to $8 million a year. Like from the Hawks' perspective, it's probably more like a $6 to $7 million area that you would be comfortable with offering somebody like JVR. But your thoughts on, you know, answering that question as far as second line left wing?
Yeah, I see James Van Riemsdyk as a fit, certainly. And I don't think, again, I don't think money is the issue. I think it'll really depend on term. And there's a guy named Matt Cain from Hockey Graphs who always projects using his model of, you know, he kind of predicts what the AAV will be and what the length will be. And he has James Van Riemsdyk down as 3 years, $5.3 million cap hit. I think it's a little low. It's a little low. Yeah. I think the cap.
I mean, he made 4-2 last year. So I coming off a career. I mean, a $1 million raise in his big. I mean, let's face it. 29 years of age. This is your opportunity to kind of cash in here. Your next contract in your 30s, all of a sudden, you know, is sort of taboo in the NHL.
Right. Absolutely. So he has him pegged at three years, 5.3. But then. He also projects like what the AAV would be for contract length. So then he goes to the fourth year, and the fourth year would be 5.7 mil. And then if he had a 5 year extension, it would be 6.1. I think it would be more in that range. I think it would be about a 4 or 5 year deal for about 6.1, maybe six. JT Miller, right before we came on, assigned an extension with Tampa, and I think it was about a 5.75.
But remember that Florida situation, right?
You're right.
5.7 in Tampa, it might be more like 6.8 here in Chicago because of state income tax.
Yeah, and that's a great point. But yeah, and I'm not. I wonder how much that factors into like the agents thinking.
Well, it has to, right?
JVR's agent is probably like, well, he got 5.5, so, but, you know, theoretically, it would be, you know, seven or whatever.
Yeah, right, right.
So
no,
yeah,
I'm sure it factors in.
But again, we just spent. Whatever, 10 minutes talking about John Tavares. Like, if they have room technically for John Tavares, so like, why would they not have room to spend a 4 or 5 year contract?
Well, hold on
JVR.
We just did the math. I mean, they don't really have the room unless Hossa's contract is moved,
which I think is inevitable.
So, like, what comes first, the chicken or the, you know, like, you can't sign somebody to a ridiculous and then put yourself in that position because no one's like gonna go out and it's not charity. I mean, you know, they know the boat you're in, and yeah. If they know you've committed, you know, in the Tavares case, $10 million a year thing, and you've got a third of your payroll going to three guys, you know, they've got you over a barrel. They're not gonna just say, oh, yeah, we'll take Anisimov off and we'll take Hossa, right. What other. You know, we'll help you out here. So to me, it's kind of like, how does he fit the pieces of the puzzle together? But I think JVR is a more realistic puzzle piece than Tavares is. And then the other part, we all talk about fixing the defense. You know, I look at the list of free agents, and then I look at, you know, number one, age, production, and kind of what they might command. And, you know, one guy that jumped off the page to me that might give the Hawks a bit of a hometown discount is John Moore. Grew up in Winnetka, just 27 years of age, a left D. So, you know, that might be a guy that if they collectively thought he was an upgrade and could be a like a 3-4 defenseman, something like that, that would be an area I would, you know, consider. But my eggs are still in the Justin Falk basket of trading for him with 2 years left on his deal. I still think he makes so much sense, and especially with the move that Dougie Hamilton and the changes that Carolina has made in recent days, making that draft deal on Saturday, I think Falk's days are numbered.
Yeah, and I the only thing about that is I'm not sure what you would give up to get him, because I thought that would be a deal you would make at the draft where you can, you know, attach the 27 or mm-hmm. whatever. You know, so now you would probably have to dip into your pipeline and, you know, maybe give up a Yogi Haru, or, you know, because now that you have Adam Boqvist, if you basically you can bring in Justin Falk for 2 years, and then, you know, maybe you're hoping that Boqvist is ready by that third year. I don't know if that buys.
As much as the draft is about the future, I think this team is really focused on now. I was impressed that, and we'll get into the draft coming up here in a couple minutes, I was impressed that, you know, there were other guys that they could have taken who were more so-called NHL ready or able to, you know, play sooner. But they went for what they believed was the best player, and they didn't care that he was 17 years of age. So that, to me, kind of – that was impressive, because I think everybody in this organization is on notice that you got to win now. So I wouldn't be too worried about that. I what type of piece would Justin Falk command? That's an interesting question.
I mean, you might have to
look – Vinny Hinostroza, maybe.
I was going to say, you might have to look up, maybe would you be willing to part ways with your first round pick next year, knowing that you just loaded up on three first round picks in 2 years, but that might be a pick that you would want to save come deadline time when yeah. you have a better idea of whether this team is a contender.
Yeah.
Or not.
I mean, to me, I would, like, there's just so many question marks coming into this yeah. season. Like, Yogi Haru, I think they're counting on him to make this team and be a significant part. But until we see him on the ice, I don't know if he's going to be legit.
Right.
But maybe you could, like, Gustav Forsling, maybe you could package your top, you know, I'll call them fence guys, your Rockford NHL ready, you know, the guys that are, you know, right on that fence.
Mm-hmm.
And Forsling would be in that discussion there. And, you know, I think Hayden's going to be a part of this team next year. I wouldn't not like to part ways with him, because I don't think you have a lot of his size. But I think there's some pieces that you could package together that would be enticing enough for Carolina to make that move.
Yeah, and I think Gustav Forsling is also a guy that's probably expendable at this point.
Oh,
and
I would totally agree.
And he's kind of the perfect you know, the perfect guy to move to, because he's a guy that the Blackhawks have maybe felt he was ready last year, but they wanted to give him that extra year to make sure he rounded his game completely and not just, you know, maybe sacrificed here and there. So he's a guy that you could probably trade, and, you know, he's probably NHL ready, but he's still maybe considered a top tier prospect or however teams would view him. So yeah, I mean, he would definitely be the centerpiece of a deal. The guy I want to point out for on defense is Ian Cole. And I think Ian Cole is a guy that maybe his underlying analytics aren't the greatest, but I think, well, first of all, he won a Stanley Cup in Pittsburgh, so he's got that pedigree. He's a veteran. He's only 29, so he's, you know, it looks like he might command about a 3 or 4 year deal, and maybe it might be up $3.5 million cap hit, and I think that's perfectly reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I like him is because Stan likes his puck movers, and Joel likes the guys that are responsible in their own end. Joel obviously loves his puck movers too, the guys that are active in the O-zone. But I do think that the Hawks are lacking in guys in stay-at-home defensemen, more of the defensive guys than the offensive guys, and I think Ian Cole would allow, you know, a Duncan Keith or a Connor Murphy to kind of be more offensive-minded, or an Eric Gustafson or whoever he's paired with, to be more offensive-minded, so that way, you know, Ian Cole can serve as a guy that's kind of clearing pucks out of the own net and bodying guys away from Corey Crawford or whoever's in goal.
Now, I like that idea. I think Ian Cole would be a nice fit if they decided to go that route. We already kind of answered David Babula's question about the hefty contract that JVR would command. We discussed that a little bit and how it would affect the Hawks in the long run. Steven asks, what's your best case scenario for the Hawks coming out of free agency? And he mentions JVR or Kelvin DeHaan. And then on the flip side, he says, I guess I should ask you what your worst-case scenario is. Kelvin DeHaan is rated just right above Ian Cole as well. He's 27 years of age. He made 3.3 last year with the Islanders. not really known as an offensive defenseman, only had one goal last year, but only played in 33 games.
Yeah, I think he might be a candidate that's I think teams might overpay for him because his salary might go into the $5 million range if teams are generous. You know, because you know how free agency gets, where you start missing out on the top tier guys and then you overpay for the just so you don't miss out on someone. I think Calvin Hahn might be that guy. I think he would be a really good fit. Best case scenario is you do land a JVR and you do land maybe a Calvin DeHaan or an Ian Cole. And then best case scenario, obviously, is if you can land one of those solid backup goalies and maybe Carter Hutton, who I think we're going to talk about in the next question. So the worst case scenario is, you know, you swing and miss on JVR and your backup, you have to overpay for a backup plan. You know, you don't get the top four defenseman you want, and then you're settling for maybe a backup goalie that maybe is unproven or inexperienced. So it'll be tough. I don't think the Blackhawks will be gun shy though this free agency. So I don't see them really striking out here. I think they'll get a guy that they want, but it's really a matter of if they can address all three of those needs up front, like top six, top four defenseman, backup goalie.
And let's start with the goalie there. I mean, only they know, theoretically, where Corey Crawford is at. I mean, you know, the smoke and mirrors, we can only ask the question so many times. I know there's ridiculous rumors out there. Maybe some of them are accurate. Maybe some are from years past. I've heard them all. I'm sure you've heard them all as well. But if actions speak louder than words. If they go out and get Carter Hutton on the free agent market, I think that tells me they don't feel completely comfortable with where Corey Crawford is at.
Yeah, I think the number is going to decide. Like if they overpay,
right.
Carter Hutton for.
And what did I was trying to figure out what they had Carter Hutton making. Was it somewhere in the $4 million range? Did you
see
it?
He's coming off a $1.13 million, and Matt Cain, the guy that I referenced earlier, has Carter Hutton slotted in at 2 years, $3.1 million as his projection.
Okay.
So, you know,
that's
doable. But if that number goes to like 3.5 or above that, then you know the Blackhawks really wanted to get this guy to make sure. I'm intrigued though, because Carter Hutton's 32 years old, does he want to try to go to a spot where he can, you know, a 1A or a 1AB type situation where he can try to win the job? Or, you know, is Chicago attractive to him where he knows he can probably start 30 games or so and you know, actually be a guy that contributes?
Yeah, I mean, he basically experienced that 1A role in St. Louis.
He led the league in save percentage, and then St. Louis kind of went off the rails. So it's really not a bad option. It's, you know, again, it's the number is going to be telling on where they stand on Corey Crawford.
A Hawks fan in Mexico chimes in at Skywalk110. Any thoughts on the Hawks taking a look at Michael Hutchinson as their backup goalie? Man, he didn't have a great year. He's 28 years of age, 3.26 goals against. A 907 save percentage, not, you know, horrible there, but certainly not great.
Yeah, you're going to need a guy that's, I don't know if it's possible to find a proven backup, but you're going to need to find some. Like the market is pretty solid here. Like Robin Lehner, Carey Lehtinen, Peter Mrazek, Jonathan Bernier, Cam Ward. Like there are some veterans on the market that I would probably explore more than Michael Hutchinson.
Let's move on to our next question. It comes from Brandon Fisher. What is the ceiling for Adam Boqvist? Are good D harder to draft than forwards? Late round goalie pick. Gravel, was that just a filler? Let's talk about the Boqvist ceiling first. Well, the obvious comparison is the guy that he mentions a lot when he talks about himself being a Swedish defenseman is Erik Karlsson. We could only hope that he would become the next Erik Karlsson. I do, when I watch tape of him, he does jump on the offense. I mean, he's going fast. He's working. You can see that speed is there, a good shot, a lot of things to like on the offensive side. But even he admitted he's got a lot to work on the defensive side.
Yeah, and that's good that he's honest with himself, but it's also good that he tries to compare himself to Erik Karlsson because he's not afraid of those comparisons. So I think that's encouraging, and I think it's also encouraging that he's only 17 years old. So there's room for growth if the Hawks are patient with him, and I know they will be because that they wouldn't have not been patient with him if they drafted him, so or if they didn't draft him. So you know, Boqvist is a guy. Let's put it this way: if he's 50 to 75% of what Erik Karlsson can be, like that's a huge win for the Blackhawks.
Yeah.
So I can see the ceiling being Erik Karlsson because he compares himself, his coaches compare himself. Like Stan Bowman said, they saw the comparisons. So I mean, obviously it's much easier to say than go out and do. So, but I very clearly see the upside. The only concern again is the injury history. He had multiple concussions last year. Whether he can stay healthy, like the NHL is a physical game. What are there going to be lingering effects? Stan Bowman obviously dismissed those, so he's not concerned. But you got to be if you draft a 17-year-old with that history already.
The second part to his question, I'm going to answer it in a different way. He says, are good D harder to draft than forwards? I'm going to take it to the NHL level. Good top four D are harder to find than forwards. And I think the proof is in the pudding. If you look at Stanley Cup champion teams, including right here in Chicago, you don't win unless you have a Norris Trophy type top-end defenseman. Now, Duncan Keith is obviously less offensive than John Carlson is or something like that. But, you know, he was a stabilizing force in those three cups. Carlson is a stabilizing force, and that's why he commanded $8 million a year. So I think, and this is just my assumption, if I look at the five D-men that the Hawks took last year, including Yuki Haru, and this year spending their two first-round picks on puck-moving defensemen, the thought is it's hard to find top four, load up with as many prospects as you can, and maybe two, maybe three hit out of the eight or nine you select over a two- or three-year period. That's just my guess. So, you know, and as we take a look at this like top 75 TSN free agent tracker, there's a lot of centers and forwards that are available. The D become a little more tough to find.
Yeah, and I don't necessarily think it's harder to find quality defensemen in the draft over forwards. I just think, like in a typical hockey game, there are 12 forwards and only six defensemen. You know, so it's you can't shelter a defenseman in the National Hockey League. You can put him on your bottom pairing, but you can't necessarily shelter, you know, his minutes the way you can a forward. Whereas if a young forward is struggling, you can put him on in a bottom six role and have those top guys, you know, kind of carry the load. So, and it's also hard to project too because, you know, these young defensemen are playing a different style than they are, you know, the forward. Like the forwards have a job, you just go score, like play defense. Like defensemen, systems vary on teams want to push the puck up to the forwards or they want to skate out of the entry. Like forwards' jobs, you know, so that really doesn't change. So that's why I think it's much tougher for a young defenseman to break through, but also to, you know, maybe find.
I mentioned it earlier, the thought that the Hawks passed on Evan Bouchard and Noah Dobson, two guys that we talked about on previous podcasts, you know, maybe there was a little more evidence that they were ready for the NHL and that they might be safer picks. They also passed on winger Oliver Wahlstrom, who we talked about a lot. There were some rumors coming out afterwards that maybe his camp was saying, you know, he's going to stay in college until he picks the exact landing spot he wants. He wants to stay on the East Coast. So that might have scared them as well.
Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't hear that. Speaking of Oliver Wahlstrom, it would have been very interesting if he went to Vancouver at 7. I would have loved to see where the Blackhawks valued if Quinn Hughes and Adam Boqvist were on the board, who would have chosen at that point. Like, because, man, it would have been interesting. I know that they released these on the clock series. I hope the Blackhawks include something or like hint at how they rated their board.
That'll be cool. We look forward to seeing that coming up. All right, it's free agent prediction time. Look, I will say this as we wrap things up. I like this courting period that the NHL has instituted this year. Because let's face it, it was going on. It was just going on, you know, undercover, so to speak. And now you put it out in the open. The NBA has done it. NFL, to a degree, has it as well. It just makes it a defined courting period where agents, players, and management of teams can kind of figure things out. And then let's face it, July 1 Sunday, we're going to be working. There's going to be some things going down on Sunday, and I think the Hawks will be ready to make a splash on July 1.
Yeah, it's the negotiating window is perfect too, because when July 1st at noon hits, like these players were getting calls at 12:01 saying you got a deal, you want it. Like they had to decide within 15 minutes, so it's definitely a much much smoother.
And you know, and then they give the upper hand to if you want to keep a player with your team. So you know, Tavares could sign with the Islanders ahead of July 1, and you know, then that would be a defined. He would set the market at that place, and then things would fall into place the rest of the way. So I like this. This makes sense. Maybe a little late to the party, but it seems to make sense. So with all this being said, Charlie, I turn to you. Who do you think the Hawks will land in free agency?
So I think I definitely think something, let's say maybe a little major is going to happen. I don't anticipate a major trade. I think it's going to come in the form of free agency. I will say I don't think this is a bold prediction by any means, but I do think they're going to find a way to get Marian Hossa's contract off the books. Artem Anisimov on July 1st submits a 10-team list that he would approve a trade to. So that's going to be interesting, because usually that happens where by the trade deadline where you ask a player and they kind of can prepare for it. Mm-hmm. Like they're just going to ask him on Sunday, hey, give us your list. And he has no idea if they're going to trade him or not. I do not think he's going to get traded. It's just a gut feeling. I do think they're going to address, I think they're going to make a big splash. I think it might be in the form of JVR. I think they're going to get a center. Jay Beagle finished with a higher face-off win percentage than Jonathan Toews last year.
Okay.
So I think that's a guy that they could target. I also think they're going to get their top four defensemen, maybe an Ian Cole, maybe a Calvin DeHaan, and then they'll address the backup goaltending situation, whether that's in the form of Carter Hutton, I'm not sure, but I do think the Blackhawks are certainly going to be active, but I don't anticipate a major trade, you know, Anisimov or like a Connor Murphy, whoever you want to throw in there. Hossa is going to be the trade that I think is going to be the major one, if you can even call it that.
Okay, so free agent wise, I will be with you, and a lot of things point to James Van Riemsdyk being the top fit. I will concur. I think that would be a great free agent acquisition for the Blackhawks. So I'll go with that. I would say if they can't get JVR, I'm a big fan of James Neal.
How many years would you go with him?
So he's 30 years of age. You know, that's an interesting thought.
So this projection has him at 1 year, 4.3. I mean, so and then going into his second year would be 4.5. A third year would be a $5.1 million cap.
Yeah, I'd do a three-year deal.
5.1. 5.1 range,
something like that. I just think what I've seen sample size going up against him in Nashville, what he brings to the table, I think he brings some grit and playing inside the dots, something this team lacks. So JVR would be my first choice. James Neal would be my second choice. And then, you know, I mentioned it earlier, I think they're going to trade for Justin Falk, and that could be the Marian Hossa, but I they're going to have to give something else up for that. I do think, like, do you think they would ever, like, Max Pacioretty sounds like he is gone. I mean, they've tried to move him to L.A. and things. Could you see making a deal with Montreal in some way? Or
I think it sounds like Max Pacioretty, the whole agent fiasco went down this weekend. It sounds like he would only approve a trade if it's contingent on an extension. So I don't envision that being a Jeff Skinner is a possibility for I know the Blackhawks have been interested in him for a while. I'm not sure that they would be willing to give him the extension because I think they want to save that money for Schmaltz, DeBrincat, Hinostroza. But this weekend, it really got me thinking on that top four defenseman and Justin Falk as a possibility. Like, there's going to be a defenseman in the pipeline that's traded. And it might be Joakim Harju. It might be – because, like, there's no way you can make a trade like that and not dip into that pool. Like, you just use your two first-round picks that we thought might be expendable, or one of the two, definitely not the eight. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, it would be great if they could land Justin Falk. At what cost, though?
Yeah, and so once the big pieces get figured out, whether it is a JVR, Falk, whoever, the medical condition of Corey is divulged in the sense of they did go after a Carter Hutton or they did not. That would, you know, if they don't go out and land somebody a top 1A, that really tells me they're comfortable with where the medical situation is with Corey. The other thing, think back to 2015. Remember Brad Richards? I think he was like 35-ish at the time. Took like, you know, he just wanted to win a cup.
Yeah.
Yeah. He took $1 million to come here and try to win a cup, and he did. So is there anybody, once you get those bigger pieces, is there anybody – maybe it's the a veteran center, whatever, that is on this list that is, you know, like in their mid to late 30s who has made their money and is looking to, you know, to win a cup and knows the way they're treated here and would come here at a bargain basement price, so to speak.
Yeah.
That would be something that, you know, that's another.
Like a Tommy Wingles again.
Yeah, I mean, I'm even thinking Somebody
like that can play like in the top nine.
Yeah, I would say like somewhere on your third line. Yeah.
Yeah. I'd have to look. I just feel like, because I agree, if you like bring back a Tommy Wingles, like the fourth line wasn't the problem. Like John Hayden's should be right. A full-time whoever. I think if you go out and get that depth player should have the capability to step in the top six if needed for
right.
Like serve as a spark plug rather than, you know, because they don't need depth players. Like, they don't need a fourth liner. They need guys that can impact the game top
right.
nine.
Right. Okay. So, we got a lot going on here. We'll be on top of it.
Well, we thought things were going to go down this weekend, but I'm sure things are going to go down this coming weekend,
yes,
right?
I think. Well, Sunday starts the official time. I mean, I would think they'll have somebody lined up by then, but Monday at the latest.
By the way,
I
have a wedding to go to on Sunday.
Oh, you
night.
Do.
I'm not going to the church service because of this. So I'm like nervous that I'm gonna leave for the reception and the Hawks are gonna make their big signing. So they better do it.
Yeah,
within 5
I would think
hours.
They would do it in the because I think it about around noon our time, 11 a.m.
Yeah,
something like that.
Yeah, I think it's noon Eastern.
Okay,
I could be wrong about that, but yeah, around noon.
All right, so we'll be on top of that. We'll keep you posted at NBCSportsChicago.com, all over Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. We'll do it all for you.
I'm sure we'll have a podcast to follow, too.
Oh, I'm sure we will. And that'll do it for this Hawks Talk podcast, presented by your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. For Charlie Romeliotis, I'm Pat Boyle. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time.